Aí aparece o Cleberson de novo, já parte pela direita. Cafu já partiu na velocidade. Ele cortou pro meio, lá vem o Cleberson. Rivaldo saiu pro Ronaldinho, pé direito, bateu.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am Tom Miller, your host of the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am here with another host, City James, James Lewis.
I'm back.
Of international fame.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's what my mom tells me.
Yeah, well, you're the only one I know, I think, that's actually lived abroad besides Claude.
Yeah.
Spent some time in China.
China, yeah. Taiwan.
Taiwan.
Hong Kong.
Not the same thing.
No. I mean, technically, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
We shouldn't get into that.
No, we shouldn't. That's not a thing that we want to get in trouble for. But, yeah, so, James, we're back at it with the World Cup, and we have an awesome Group E. We have Brazil, obviously always a contender for the World Cup. Switzerland, a surprise contender, and probably a reason that I do not believe in the FIFA rankings at all. Yeah. Costa Rica, the Cinderella story from 2014, and Serbia, home of beloved Nemanja Vidic, who of course doesn't play anymore, James.
Yeah, good.
There's another Nemanja on that team that I love, though.
You love him now?
Yeah. Yeah, he does it for me.
It's
he's good. I like
change.
His conservative style. We will get into that. We will also discuss the greatest five World Cup players of all time. I've been looking around online, James, for this, and the lists are, I don't know, there's like a weird mix between only putting players out that everyone will know and just creating a debate between Maradona and Pele.
Yeah.
Just to get clicks. You know
what
you I
mean? Know, that, it's a tough, yeah, just, it's all for the clicks, really. What are we even talking about?
No, it really is, though, you know? So let's start with that, all right? So I have a couple lists, and I took off of 25, top 25 lists and a couple top 10 lists, and there were some recurring themes in there. Let's start with number five for me. I am going to go with Paolo Rossi of the Italian national team in 1982. Okay, so he had a three-year ban for match-fixing cut to 2 years, conveniently in time for him to make the squad, which you and I discussed with the Peru team. That didn't happen.
Right.
But Rossi actually was able to play the World Cup, but he probably wouldn't have been involved in the squad in the current age with the way the politics work, especially in a squad like Italy. You know, I was reading an article earlier today about the Argentinian squad, about Icardi, and how Icardi had essentially stolen Maxi Lopez's wife and her three kids as well. And that was one of the reasons that Messi and Mascherano, who apparently run the show in Argentina, didn't want him on the team. Icardi, who has one of the highest conversion rates in the European leagues, in and year out.
I've heard a lot of that about cliques and especially around Argentina and Messi basically controlling who's in the team and who isn't. He's denied those rumors, by the way.
Who, Messi?
Yeah, Messi has, but you know, who knows? I think I agree there's a lot of locker room politics.
I feel like in Argentina there's a really weak FA and weak structure, which we've talked about before. And I think that if Messi were to be the one to step up, it would almost be in a role that's like, well, no one else is. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. So, Paolo Rossi for me is number five because I've never heard of a story like that where a guy can be completely banned for 2 years, make the squad, and then jump onto a laboring Italy team and score immediately and win the Golden Ball, the Golden Boot, and the Ballon d'Or in that season, leading Italy to their 1982 title. Absolutely outrageous. and according to reports, a very successful real estate agent now. Yeah, so he's moved on to bigger and better things, James Lewis. Number four for me is Gerd Müller. Part of this is that I just love Gerd Müller. Like, I think that he's amazing. He scored 14 goals in 13 World Cup games. He scores in the finals. He scores just all the time. He has a goal-to-game ratio as an international star over 1-1. I think it's 69 goals in 67 games for Germany, which is absurd. He scored the winner in 1974 for the West German team to overcome Cruyff's Holland in the shock final result. And for me, he is number four, James, even above Der Kaiser, Franz Beckenbauer.
Yeah, it's a good
moving
a
on to
number
three, someone that we are all familiar with, Zinedine Zidane. James, let's talk about Zidane. We mentioned it a little bit in France, how he exited his career the way he wanted to.
Going out doing what he loved.
Doing it, exactly, headbutting Italians.
Yeah.
But in 1998, he actually got a red card against Saudi Arabia, which is not a surprise if you follow his career at all. But he's still, his final performance was absolutely phenomenal. He scores two headers on two corner kicks in the final to lead France to a home win, their only World Cup win, as they won 3-0 over a much stronger Brazil team. Mm-hmm. And you have to say that his 2006 performance might actually be stronger than his 1998 performance.
Yeah, he's up there for me. I might even have him higher in my list.
Yeah, he actually leads them all the way to the final, scores an ice-cold penalty. Everybody remembers he chipped it off the spot, and then he headbutted Materazzi, and that's pretty much all they wrote. For me, Zinedine Zidane, number three. Now, James, getting to two and one, these ones are pretty obvious. All the lists like to pick Maradona number one, and I pick Pelé number one because Pelé won the World Cup in 1958 when he was a 17-year-old. He won the World Cup in 1962. He lost in 1966, also injured in that year, but won again in the best World Cup team ever in 1970. He has three World Cup trophies and led his team to all of them. The big difference is between him and Maradona, a lot of people like to say that Maradona's team was not as star-studded as Pelé's, but, I mean, you get three World Cup trophies. Maradona had one and did not. He made it to the final in 1990 but didn't win. I think three World Cup trophies is absurd.
Yeah, can't argue with that.
Yeah, a couple honorable mentions. Brazilian Ronaldo Lima, of course, won in 2002. Also won in 1994, James. He was on the squad.
He was on the squad. Also in that final in 98.
Yes, in 1998, he did lose. I mean, there's a lot of conjecture about what happened the night before. Why was mm-hmm. he so poor? He was the best player in the world at the time in the final, and he came out and said that it was because he had a seizure the night before. Whether or not that's true is one thing, but, I mean, two World Cup trophies and four World Cups as he played in 94, 98, 02, and 2006. Of course, in 2006, he actually broke the record, which would soon be broken again by Miroslav Klose. He actually broke the record for goals in World Cup history with that step over, if you'll remember it.
Yeah. No, he's actually, I have him pretty high on my list. Not an honorable mention.
Yeah. Especially in 02, coming back from a big-time knee injury, coming back and leading Brazil to that World Cup title in 2002 is extremely impressive. Just an honorable mention there. Obviously, there's a lot of players that we're not mentioning, but we're just doing a top five list, James. Just a quick one.
Yeah, just a quick top five.
Sure. On to the group now. Group E, Brazil is 5-1. They are one of the favorites, and they should be.
Absolutely.
They won the CONMEBOL over Uruguay, Argentina, Colombia, Peru, and Chile with a plus 30 goal differential, 41 goals in 18 matches, and they won that ridiculously difficult group by 10 points. 10 points, James. 10 points.
Yeah, and actually, it was a pretty interesting qualification run for him because they started out pretty poorly. And then came surging back after they brought Tite back, mm-hmm. back in.
Their manager, Tite, yep.
Really found that, I think, something like 10 games. They won 9 in a row, and like right after Tite took over, and just catapulted from there. They've got a lot of momentum behind them.
They are immensely talented, always offensively talented. They are missing a couple players. Dani Alves went down. I'm not a huge Dani Alves fan, honestly, but I understand his role, especially in a Brazilian team that's attacking all the time as an outside back. And of course, at the epicenter of everything is Neymar. James, how do you feel about Neymar?
I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of Neymar. I think he is supremely talented, and he's definitely got the confidence to make an impact anywhere he goes. But I think he's going to be an awesome player in the tournament. But if you're asking me how I feel about him, I'm not a fan.
I'm in the same boat as you. I guess I have a hard time with players that spend so much time on the turf. I mean, you can take all your Manchester United shots that you want to right now. But he honestly, for me, it's not just that. It's the off-the-field stuff. Where he, you know, he leaves Barcelona, which I totally understand. I know the locker room and the behind the scenes at Barcelona are always in stark contrast to their public image. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't surprise me that a player would want to leave Barcelona. But to move to PSG and to be the highlight of their offseason, to be a 180 million pound player, essentially double the previous transfer record, is another thing, which is good for him, basically, is what I thought at the time. And then to immediately try to spin it into a move to Real Madrid, you know, not with your language, with all the things that you are doing on the field, in just about every single way, James, he's come out as a real modern-day mercenary, and it's difficult for me to really get behind a player like that, even though he is supremely talented.
Well, for me, it's not even about necessarily being a mercenary. I mean, like you said, you can understand some of the moves he's making.
Yeah.
But to me, he's just like the whole drama with Cavani this season just passed at PSG.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about locker room politics. I mean, to me, he seems like just a total arrogant locker room cancer.
Yeah, and I mean, he's so good in his dribbling. He's one of the highest rated dribblers in the world, top three in terms of successful dribbles, which is a stat where you have a player who, when he takes on a defender, how often does he keep the ball? That's the stat for dribbling, and he is always in the top three. I've seen him play live. He is electric. He's a great finisher, supreme free kick taker, passer. He's excellent in all ways, but I'm just not into what he's about.
Yeah, I agree.
It's honestly been that way since he engineered his move to Barcelona with his dad pulling all the strings.
I feel like that wasn't like that. They didn't publicize it that much back then, and I guess it's because he wasn't in the limelight yet. But he in the beginning, he seemed like he was going to be kind of humble. He knew he was second fiddle to Messi, you know.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it's okay. I'm going to play with Messi. But then I think as he kind of grew into his, you know, he kind of grew into his ego a little bit. I mean, I just think. Understanding that he wants to get out from Messi's shadow, but honestly, you just got there. You know, learn from Messi for a little bit before you move on.
Yeah, and I did understand from a competitive standpoint a little bit why he wanted to leave Barcelona besides money, obviously. You know, it's hard to hold money against a player for a move here and there, but I can hold it against him when they're trying to engineer move after move after move, like in consecutive years, when they're making £500,000 a week. That's easy for me to dislike.
But did anyone think that he was going to actually stay at PSG long term? I don't think anyone thought that
No.
at all.
No, and I think he thought that he would be in the running for Ballon d'Or just because he was on PSG. They would make a deep run in the Champions League. Of course, he got injured, which could have affected their Champions League run. Mm-hmm. But the news coming out of Real Madrid is all of the same, which is that he wants to go to Real Madrid now, and he's not denying it.
Of course not. I'm sure he would.
Still, he is a supreme talent and the leader of an extremely talented Brazil group. So, James, let's get into their narrative. A lot of people are taking the easy road on this one when you try to read about them, and it's revenge for their 2014 home loss to Germany, 7-1, the biggest beatdown between two highly ranked teams on a big stage in sports history, probably. What do you think about the idea of that kind of revenge being a thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's definitely an easy one to write about. But I think that they've kind of exercised those demons. They beat them not too long ago. They beat Germany pretty recently in a game. And they've had this monstrous qualifying campaign. I think they're coming in. That's the old Brazil, and it's past. I don't think that they're carrying any of that weight into this tournament.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, they've got a team that is electric. Choosing who to play up top for them, if you're going Jesus, Neymar, Coutinho, Jesus, Neymar, Costa, you know, you've got so much attacking talent.
Willian.
Willian's there. And they all seem to play really well together. And I just think they're going in not scared of anybody. And it's a young team, too.
Yeah, I would agree completely. I think for me, the player to watch is actually Tite, the manager. Seriously, because his ability to make this group cohesive and gel and play in the same direction with the amount of talent they have from top to bottom, I mean, that is going to be what makes or breaks them. Not Neymar, who can absolutely get a ball from the middle of the field, dribble through four guys and score a wonder goal. He absolutely will score a wonder goal in this tournament. Mm-hmm. It's whether or not that they can get this team that has players from every nation and every league in the world to play and work in the same direction.
Yeah. And yeah, no, absolutely. And that actually, to go back to what I was saying before, that they did win a friendly against Germany earlier this year. And apparently they made a really big deal about it in Brazil. To me, that was their kind of cathartic moment to kind of exercise that demon.
I'm not gonna lie; like, I don't really care about friendlies at all.
I don't either. I agree, but I think that people are talking about it being revenge. I think they got it out of their system. It's not about them needing revenge anymore. It's about them being on top of their game and playing their game.
Yeah, and I think that they have the talent from up and down to do it. They actually have two stellar goalkeepers, which is really, has that ever happened in Brazil's history?
No, they usually don't have, they might have a solid one, but never really a great backup.
Yeah, I mean, Alisson for Roma is superb. He's one of the best shot savers in the world. And Ederson is a good shot saver, but better in the run of play. He probably won't play in the World Cup unless they are winning their group handily and gets a third. He gets that third game in the group stages. But Alisson especially is superb, and having depth there is important.
Yeah. Alisson's had a great season at Roma. I mean, he's earned it, and he played extremely well throughout their qualification. So
he did.
Even though I obviously am a little bit biased, I can't really fault Tite if he does start Alisson.
Yeah, I think Alisson starts there. I think on the outside back, they have Marcelo. You know, a lot of people talk about Marcelo and his defensive frailties or whatever, but honestly, he gets back. Whether or not he is a good positional defender is up for debate for sure, but his crossing is not up for debate.
No,
group, I believe that his crossing will be part of what takes them through with three wins.
Well, I don't think they're looking at anybody in this group that's going to really press them, you know, defensively. I just don't see. I mean, Switzerland is the second best team in this group, according to everybody, and they barely have an attack.
Yeah,
that's not, you know, Shaqiri.
Yeah, I agree completely. Just to name a few more names that people might know, Thiago Silva, Marquinhos from PSG. I like Miranda, too, from Inter. He's a solid player. Casemiro, I really like from Real Madrid. Fernandinho, stellar season for Manchester City. And those guys are really important, those defensive midfielders, too, for a Brazilian team.
They are, because the front three have to have complete freedom to attack, basically. I mean, you look at who they took. In an attacking sense, none of those players play defense.
Yeah, exactly. You have Coutinho, Willian, Douglas Costa, Neymar, Gabriel Jesus, and Firmino, and you could play so many different systems with those players. So many. You could play three up top, you could play two and two strikers and two underneath with Gabriel Jesus in like a poacher role, and Firmino dropping back with Neymar playing through as a playmaker. You have so many options with this squad. That's why I say Tite is so important.
Yeah, he's going to have to, if he gets it right, that's what I'm saying. If he gets the attack right and they click, then, you know, these, obviously it's not a surprise to say Brazil could are our favorites, but.
Yeah, but they absolutely are. Their history, they're the only team in World Cup history to qualify for every World Cup. Probably not really a surprise. They have 5 World Cup trophies. They are 70-17-17. That's 70 wins, 17 draws, and 17 losses in 104 matches. They're the best World Cup team ever in 1970, at least in my opinion. Pele won in 58, 62, and 70, so that's 3 of 4 World Cups in a row. They've had 2 second-place finishes, 2 third-place finishes, 2 fourth-place finishes. There's really only one team in the world that challenges them for World Cup supremacy. We will get to that when we preview that team. Their historic player, you have Pele, 77 goals in 92 appearances, including 12 goals in 14 matches in the World Cup. Of course, he won 3 World Cups. And then you have Ronaldo Lima, 62 goals in 98 appearances and 15 goals in 19 World Cup appearances. Of course, he had 2 World Cup trophies and lost in the final in 1998 and in the quarterfinals in 2006. James, anything you want to add to Brazil?
No, I mean, that was a pretty good sum up. I just want to say Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo, was going to be my number one World Cup player on my list.
Okay, why?
Just, I mean, watching him, for me, he's one of my favorite players of all time to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Scoring 15 goals across the World Cup, and just, you know, that 2002 World Cup, coming back from a major knee injury, driving that team forward. In 98, up until the final, he was electric, and to me, he's just, across all the tournaments that he's played in, he's always performed.
Very true. Even in 2006, where he was on his last legs,
he was still deadly. You couldn't leave him alone.
He was. That's absolutely true. Is there any chance that you will cut your hair in the Ronaldo haircut?
I already did. Do we have a webcam portion?
Absolutely not.
Is there a video on this?
Absolutely not.
Because I'm there.
Oh, so heavily favored to get out of the group, Brazil. And then, James, as you alluded to earlier, Switzerland, 66-1, second in the Euro Group B behind Portugal, and playing against Hungary in that group. Not a really strong group, but 9 out of 10 wins in qualifying. They beat Northern Ireland in their playoff on a PK. Interesting note, they are ranked 6th in the world in the FIFA rankings, James.
Yeah, that
How do you feel about that?
I don't know. That's crazy. To me, Switzerland are the international soccer equivalent of a manila folder taped to a beige wall. They could not be more boring, yet stable, I guess. You know, it's like you need your handy old fallback. Well, Switzerland. Bet on Switzerland. I don't know why. Because no one here on this team inspires me, even a little bit.
You're not a Chaka fan?
I'm not a Chaka fan. No,
I am
not.
You can
put me firmly in the anti-Chaka category.
Chaka, of course, of Arsenal, defensive midfielder. Ken and I think Ken is in our boat for the most part, but whenever Chaka shows that ability to shoot from 30 yards out and scores one out of every 35 to 40 of them, Ken gets back on track with him. But I've never been a Chaka fan, especially as a marking defensive midfielder.
I don't get it. And they have Johan Giroux in defense. They're bringing Johan Giroux to this World Cup.
What's your point? What are you trying to say?
It's amazing to me. I don't know how they're sixth in the world with these. I guess they're just a really great team.
They also have Zirdan Shaqiri, who is actually a player that can score a wonder goal. Did have a bicycle goal in the last World Cup. Stout little dude who cuts inside. The only problem with Shaqiri is A, inconsistency, and B, doesn't really link other players up in his team.
Yeah, but who is he going to link up with here? You know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that means you'll see a lot of him.
They have one. He's still a pretty young player, but he was kind of a breakout player a couple years ago. Real Embolo, who moved from, I think, FC Basel over to Schalke 04 in the Bundesliga.
Mm-hmm.
He is a very dangerous attacking player, but he's been fighting an injury for the last two seasons. He's basically their spark in offense, and if he's healthy, he's going to play, but he's barely played all season and the season before.
That's not a good start.
So you have Shaqiri, and you got him being fed, you know, long shot come through balls by Granit Xhaka. I don't know. I just don't see it. But hey, they're number six in the world.
Did you see Barami made the squad?
Yes.
Well, he's supposed to make the squad.
That's
what I'm reading. They haven't announced their squad yet as of the taping of this episode, but they said Barami might make the squad. Do you remember him from the Prem?
Yeah.
Bleach blonde hair?
Yeah. They were. I think it was Frosted Tips, actually.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Eventually, sure, I guess all bleach blonde hair eventually does become Frosted Tips. That's why, I mean, with my Ronaldo haircut, I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I guess you don't. If you do that, I will post it. I'll put it on our website. Well,
it's part of my plan to not have a job in order to watch the World Cup.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. I'm looking at their roster. You have Ricardo Rodriguez in there. He's a good player, but I feel like if you're relying on an outside back who didn't have the greatest year ever, he's on Milan.
He did not have a good season in Milan. I think he's a decent left back. From what I was reading on a couple of discussion threads about him at Milan is that he's too slow. He doesn't have the pace. And I think talking about going up against Brazil, actually, I think this group has some decently pacey players in it, even outside of Brazil. I mean, Serbia has a couple wingers that'll fly as well. We'll get to them later, but I think he could struggle. And if he's got Johan Giroux backing him up, then who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You also have Lichtensteiner on the other side of Juventus.
Seasoned veteran.
Yeah, seasoned veteran, but I worry about this team mainly against Brazil. And honestly, I don't know if they're going to make it out of the group.
You know, I think they're totally uninspiring and bland as a team, but I think they're going to make it out of the group.
They did win 9 of 10 in qualifying, so
I think they know how to win.
Kind of team.
Yeah. Surprisingly balanced. Even though you can't see where or how.
True, true. Their manager is Vladimir Petkovic, and, I mean, basically their narrative is they're a pretty strong World Cup team. They made it to the last 16 in the last two tournaments, and they played very well in qualifying, as we said. Their history, they've qualified in 11 of 21 out of Europe. That's pretty impressive for the size country that they are, three times in the quarterfinals and three times in the round of 16. So they are a team that gets through when they play, and that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, and they have pretty good goalkeepers. Is actually, I think, their strongest overall position. I mean, they got three starting goalkeepers from the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
One from Borussia Dortmund and the other, Roman Berkey, and then the other, Jan Sommer from Mönchengladbach, who they perform week in, week out. So, I mean, maybe they're just, I think they're probably just solid all around, if uninspiring.
Yeah.
And unexciting and bland.
But, that's a good description.
Hey, they're the Swiss.
They are the Swiss. I refuse to make any kind of, like, clock watch references. I absolutely refuse. Their historic player is Josef Hugi, 6 goals in the home tournament of 1954. There's a great poster of the Switzerland 1954 World Cup. Actually, pretty much all the posters pre-1990 are awesome, if you've ever seen them, James.
Really? I'm going to have to go check them out.
I'm a big fan
of poster art.
Yeah, it's really worth it. Some of them are absolutely hideous. Italy in 1990, I think, is like a pixelated dude. It's so weird looking. And there's a story about it. And the guy who actually, they did a public contest. Everybody submit your art and we'll pick a guy. And there's an article written that has this guy's interview about how it changed his life. And the actual thing that he did was a ball with pixelated arms and legs. And
I'm looking at it right now. They're little blocks of Italian flags, right?
That's what it is. Yes. They're horrendous.
Man. Sometimes when I look at stuff like this, I'm like, yeah, I could be a professional designer.
No one wants you as a professional designer. Trust me.
I don't know. I could come out with the next block guy.
Yeah. This guy had such a long story about it, too. He's talking about it like, I'm in my car, and then all of a sudden, I win. I'm the winner, and I get to present it. And I'm like, dude, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
He's an Italian guy, right?
Yeah, he says that all his life he knew he was going to be a winner. I'm not kidding. That is a direct quote.
Wow.
He knew he was going to be a winner. And you only really get the joke when you see it. So it's worth looking at. Moving on to Serbia, 200-1. Winners of Group D above Ireland, Wales, and Austria. Their manager is, here we go, Mladen Krstajic.
Mm-hmm.
Krstajic, there it is.
Krstajic. Yic.
Their best player is Nemanja Matic of Manchester United, in my opinion, but I could also make a very strong case for the player to watch, Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, hyphenated there, of Lazio, who had an absolutely stellar year and will odds on probably end up in one of the top 5 teams in the world after this World Cup.
Yeah, they're talking about like 100 million for him, something like that. I'll give you that Matic had a good season. But I think Milinkovic-Savic is certainly the most talented player on this squad.
He is. I think Matic, I picked Matic as best player because that's who you would choose as your overall experienced guy. Mm-hmm. Has a very high floor, if you know what I mean. Like, his minimal performance is still going to be good. A guy like Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, he could have an off game and disappear. On the other hand, his ceiling is a lot higher than Matic's.
Well, he's not super experienced on the international stage. One of the points of discussion here should be the inexperienced manager that they brought in basically after qualifying.
Yes.
Fired their old dude. And some people speculate part of the reason why he was fired is his refusal to include Milinkovic-Savic in the squad.
Yeah, yeah. Another one of those situations where the FA gets on their high horse, essentially, and demands to be a part of the selection process of the manager. Like we said, they won their group in European qualifying. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
With their manager, Muslin, and then he was fired after disagreements with the Serbian FA, based on what you said exactly. And it's just like, why can't we just hold it together for qualifying? And it's easier for us to say, James, because we didn't qualify.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I bring it up every episode. ESPN wrote an article today, and I'm not really... ESPN for me is like clickbait journalism. They've really dropped off in all across the board for their journalism, for their writing. It lacks any kind of real analytics or any kind of intelligence now. It's more like a bland storyline that you click on. But my ESPN rant aside, people read ESPN. They have the highest readership in the country. for soccer fans because, and non-soccer fans, which is just as important. So non-soccer fans go down the list and they see, oh, why did the United States not make the World Cup? And then people who didn't pay attention are like, wait, we're not in this?
Yeah.
That hurts, James. It hurts.
Yes, it hurts. Although, did you see the kids playing in that friendly? We won't go too far into it, but
I did. I was happy about it. It's a difficult time because we don't have a manager, so you don't really know what they want to do. They don't have a general manager or essentially director of football, so you're not sure which one of these guys is actually going to end up on the team. And if it were up to me, in my very biased and still bitter mode, I would say that I don't want the U.S. players like Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore. I don't want them on the team again.
Yeah.
But that's just me being bitter. They're probably still the best, within the best 20 that you could put out in a roster. So
yeah. I mean,
that's why I didn't get the job.
Hey, did you apply? Because I was going to say, we should throw our hats into the ring. I'll be your assistant. We can.
You know they keep track and they do background checks, right?
I don't know that that's true.
Anyway, Serbia has a history as Yugoslavia and as a history of Serbia and Montenegro. Mm-hmm. They've actually qualified 12 of 21 times within that realm between those three country names.
Yeah.
And they were in the semis once and the quarters three times. So they're not, you know, they're not, it's not out of the realm of possibility for them to make a deep run. They have a lot of interesting depth, but I really don't like to see teams that have problems in the ownership level. You know what I mean? In the administration level. I think that does not bode well for teams in the cup.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I like these guys. I like Serbia. It's hard to see how they navigate this group, but I think they have fight. They got passion, and they have an absolutely massive midfield. I think out of their their starting 11, I think potential starting 11 has like two players under 6 foot only.
Yeah.
And those guys are 5'10 and 5'11.
It can make a difference for sure. Cause in these games, you know, you're talking about one goal difference, one free kick, one header, one corner kick, one header. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and that's they're actually the tallest squad in the World Cup.
Modric helps that a little bit, it's absolutely a thing that you can watch for because, like I said, games are usually decided by one goal, and it just takes one little moment. Historic players, Drazan Djurkovic, 4 goals in the Golden Boot 1962. Dr. Pete calls him the Big Jerk. That's fantastic. And I put him in there anyways, even though he didn't really do much in the World Cup. Nemanja Vidic.
Sure.
I heart you, Nemanja Vidic.
Sure. Nemanja Vidic. Great guy.
Hey, 1 goal in 10 matches in World Cup qualifying 2006. Just saying. Vidic's squad.
He, I saw him eat glass once.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss Nemanja Vidic. Our defense, Manchester United's defense, not the same.
Oh, you've got Phil Jones.
Joe Jones. I'll tell you what, that guy can score a own goal like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Side pocket every time. We'll save that for the England preview, James. On to Costa Rica, 400-1 odds, which is a little bit long, I feel like. They were second in the CONCACAF group, below Mexico, above the U.S., Panama, and Honduras. And they only, I mean, we said this a lot in 2014. They made that deep Cinderella run. They only have 5 million people. They're one of the smallest nations. For me, it's a gut feeling. I just don't know if the Cinderella run can continue.
Yeah, you know, they certainly don't inspire a lot of confidence. And half their players are from the MLS, which
like all I guess of our they're players
the,
are from
the better MLS. Half. Yeah, better half than what we had. But I just think, again, they're not. It's going to be hard. It's going to be tough for them, and I don't know where the goals are going to come from for them.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their best player. It's Keylor Navas, who I really doled a lot of hate on maybe 2 years ago as the weakest link of the Real Madrid super team that wins all the Champions Leagues.
Yeah,
but honestly, watching him play, he had a really nice Champions League run this year.
He had one great reaction save in particular in the final. I forget who shot it, but it went through a couple people, and it was a hard shot, and he caught it. He dove and caught it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it stuck to him. And like that's the kind of thing where a rebound there is a goal.
Yeah.
And a terrific
save. I want to say Trent Alexander-Arnold.
It might have been.
For some reason, that's sticking out to me. But yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely, I agree. I think a lot of people thought that. I think he's gotten better every season. It's going to be a shame when he's replaced by David De Gea.
As a Manchester United fan, I hope not. I do think he's actually underrated now because everybody looks for a chink in the armor of that Real Madrid team, besides the fact they finished 20 points behind Barcelona. Yeah. And he sticks out, I guess. He had a low transfer cost, and he's from Costa Rica. You know what I mean? That's an easy target. But I think he's a really, really good reactionary keeper who can keep you in games that you shouldn't be in. We've talked about this before.
And I think he's absolutely a big game player, too. And I think he's going to step onto the stage and he's going to step up his game, no doubt. I expect him to carry these guys on his back if they do anything.
Yeah. So the manager is Oscar Ramirez. Not a lot to say really about that. Their player to watch is still Brian Ruiz. Still.
Yeah, that's a shame because I always thought Joel Campbell could have become something. And I still think he's whenever I see him play for Costa Rica, and granted, when I see him play for Costa Rica, he's playing against CONCACAF teams. But
yeah,
he always seems tricky. He always seems like he's on the verge of creating something for him. Brian Ruiz, I mean, he's a Fulham reject at the end of the day. I'm not a huge Brian Ruiz fan. And now, unfortunately for him, I guess he's at Sporting in Portugal, and with all that mess going down, who knows? Yeah,
bad stuff there.
But he'll be happy to get away for a little while.
I actually have more respect for Brian Ruiz. I don't think he's incredibly dynamic on the ball. He's very slow on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But his ability to put that last ball through is still there, whether or not that gets finished. If you have three opportunities, he's still a guy that can make something happen. And, you know, with Navas in goal, if you can keep everybody at bay, you can make the quarterfinals like it did in 2014. I just don't think that I would bet on that. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think lightning strikes twice. They're a deep-sitting team that counterattacks. I think that they could play with Switzerland and Serbia. I just don't think their tactics match up well. And honestly, I don't think they're going to do well. I think this is the end of the dream, even with Navas in goal.
Well, I think this is a bad group for them to be in.
Yeah.
This is a tough group, honestly.
It's tough, but it doesn't suit their style, too.
Yeah. It doesn't at all. And just, again, Navas is going to keep them in games, but I don't know who is going to score the goals that they're going to need to win.
Yeah. I agree completely.
Their main striker is not a goal scorer. He's a kind of a playmaking forward.
Yeah.
He's their main striker. And, that's okay to have it when you have other dangerous players playing around you in attack. But like you said, Brian Ruiz is kind of also a playmaker himself. Joel Campbell, not really a finisher. And I don't know a lot about their fourth striker, but I'm going to assume that he's not lighting the world on fire.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assessment. And I think, you know, their history, they've qualified for 5 out of 21 World Cups. They've made the round of 16 twice, which is impressive.
It is,
once in 1990, sure. Quarterfinals last cup. But the fact that, to me, their historic player is Navas, their player of their team for all time.
Let's not forget Paolo Wanchope, Manchester City legend.
You and your Manchester City legends out of nowhere. And by the way, while we're on that, I had to listen to the last episode where you were talking about Manchester City players in the group with France.
Yeah.
There's only one.
Mendy. Yeah.
But you were like, you're completely wrong, and it's Mendy. And then you said Kasper Schmeichel, who does not play for them anymore.
No, I said he was a City product. Obviously, he doesn't play for City anymore.
Yeah, and then Aaron Moy,
Aaron Moy.
Aaron Moy. You don't get to claim him.
No, he was. I said he was at City for like a 2 weeks on his way to on his way to Huddersfield.
Huddersfield glory, my friend. So, James, let's settle it. How do you think this group will end up?
My head's telling me it's going to be Brazil, Switzerland, Serbia, Costa Rica.
Okay.
My heart wants it to be Brazil, Serbia, Costa Rica, and Switzerland to score 0 goals and get 0 points.
Okay, so if I were to combine your head and your heart, where would you end up on, say, I don't know, my World Cup pool?
Probably not doing well.
I'm glad you picked those body parts. A lot of directions you could have gone in with there. I'm going to pick Brazil, and then I'm going to have Serbia, Switzerland, and really? Costa Rica.
That's brave.
I don't think it's that brave. I don't think there's much life in Costa Rica. I really don't. That's why I see them as a four.
Yeah.
And Serbia, I think, has some players that can take over a game. And Switzerland's just too bland for me. And I think it comes down to Switzerland versus Serbia. And to me, Serbia's better.
I think they're definitely the... I would... And maybe this is... maybe I'm just being really harsh on Switzerland here. Because I find them super bland. But Serbia, passionate team. Full of fighters. They got Kolarov. City legend.
Of course. And, the only thing I'll say about that is we've said time and time again that we don't like a team with a background noise in their FA. It trickles down. But at the same time, I think this group is there for the taking, and Serbia has enough talent to overcome Switzerland and Costa Rica. And Brazil, I think, this is their walk in the park. I'm surprised that Russia wasn't picked in this group, honestly.
Yeah, that would have been a great match.
Yeah, exactly. All right, James, anything else you want to add to Group E?
Just to say, I think we agree. Can't see any team but Brazil topping this group, and I think it'll be a walk in the park for them. The rest are going to fight for scraps.
Yeah, I think this is a good group for Brazil beyond that as well. We alluded to the fact that there could be a third game where they are already qualified in the one spot, which is very possible. In that case, you'll see a lot of the backup players, and that can make a huge difference as these games are played in a short amount of time, and most of these players are coming to the end of a very long 10-month European season where an extra 3 days off or whatever can make a huge difference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Brazil is going to be well poised coming out of this group.
Yeah. All right, James, we're going to settle it up here. Group E is in the books. We will be on to Group F in, 3 days or so, 4 days or so.
All right.
Getting excited, getting closer. We got a lot of advertisements going on here in the U.S. None of them involved the U.S. national team, obviously. But I love to watch they're doing a countdown, the top 100 World Cup moments. Some of them, 100 is a lot, James. It's a lot.
There's been a lot of great moments in the World Cup. It's a lot of moments.
There's a World Cup every 4 years. Some of these moments, they're not that great. Like the unveiling of the English mascot in 1966.
A pass on that one. Maybe cut the list to 75 and pull out some of those.
Yeah, but we're already down to the last 25, and they're pretty good. Pretty much everything is of note. Landon Donovan making an appearance,
yes,
obviously.
Yes.
I haven't looked at the announcers list, by the way. I don't know about you, but I'm not really a big fan of American announcers.
If they have Alexi Lalas announcing any of this, I'll just have it on mute.
I promise you that he will be there. I don't mind him as much as I used to, but at the same time, I want to hear an English accent while watching soccer. I don't know if you're the same way, but it's, I don't know. There's something about an English accent, actually any accent besides an American doing the games for me. I just feel like it's not an American sport and it feels more authentic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just don't think we have that iconic presenter yet. I don't think that we've got that person who... So, we don't have somebody that stands head and shoulders above the rest, so everyone just seems kind of average. Whereas when we listen to, or we hear the presenters on a Champions League final, the passion and the knowledge, and yes, the accent lends a little bit more credibility to it. We need to do something with our young presenters out there. We need to really get this next class up and coming.
Yeah, didn't we steal Martin Tyler?
I thought we did.
I thought we did, but I think he's ESPN.
Tommy Smythe is a he's probably available. I know he's your favorite.
No, not
right
at
the back of the old onion net.
Oh no, that's not for me. That's not for me. I would take anybody from NBC. I like all their announcers. Honestly, I do. NBC Sports, but of course, there's a different network. So I think we're going to get a lot of Americans. There's a breakdown of the announcers, and almost all of them are American, I think.
What network the biggest is games? What network is it, by the way?
Maybe it's I Fox, know this. Dude. It's been Fox. They won the rights a long time ago. So that I like the girl that does the presentations. Rachel Bonetta, I mean, she seems to know what she's talking about. She's excited, and I actually think she's pretty good. I don't want to hear Landon Donovan on there. I know he's done some ESPN work. He's done some Fox work. Stu Holden's going to be on there. I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about that.
I think it's pretty hard for former players to be good commentators. Oh, here, I've got the commentary team here. And most of them are going to be working from L.A. They're going to be casting the games. They're not going to be live in Russia.
I was going to ask you, that was my next question. Please be at the games, and they're not.
No.
Oh, I hate that.
They have some people in Russia. But commentary teams, Kobe Jones, I know you're a big fan. Warren Barton.
I like Kobe Jones as a person, as a player.
Yeah. Rob Stone. He'll be a studio host. I know you love Rob Stone.
I really don't.
Oh, JP Della Camera.
No!
And Tony Miola.
Wake up, America.
And they're going to be in... Those are the good ones that are going to be in Russia. Stu Holden, he'll be in Russia, too.
I don't want to bash on him too much, but at the same time, I just can't reiterate the fact that, to me, hearing soccer announced by Americans is like watching a baseball game announced by British people. It doesn't make sense, and it's just a much smoother game when you have a nice British accent behind it. And we're not going to get that, James. I blame you.
It's fair.
I blame you.
It's fair.
Yeah. Whatever you did in China all those years ago. Lord only knows.
I didn't know there would be any consequences.
For James Lewis, I am Tom Miller saying, I hope everybody has an awesome week, and let's get ready for the World Cup, James.
Wake up, America.